Welcome everyone. My name is Bernadette Harris and I've been given the task of facilitating and helping Michael. Unfortunately, Rose can't be with us today due to some difficulties, some personal issues in her own family. So Michael, very kindly, has agreed to stand in and to do a presentation for us that he has done several times before. So he's very familiar with the content. So we're very lucky to have him. Michael started his career as ESL teacher and sort of discovered the internet and started playing and started working in e-learning. He's been working as an e-learning practitioner for many years, at least for the last eight, and currently he works for TAFE, South Australia, and also in his own business. So I'd like you to welcome Michael Coghlan.
Morning, everybody. Just a couple of minor corrections. I've done this presentation twice, but I should know it well enough. And Rose and I have both been doing a presentation on Twitter at some of the national events. So mine's slightly different. Rose's was called Why I Hang Around with Twits, which I suppose I could call this presentation as well. Mine is called Why Would You Twitter or Yammer? So why would you use Twitter? Why would you use Yammer? Yammer is a product we've been using in South Australia, which is very similar to Twitter. It's the kind of private, in-house, behind-walled garden version of Twitter for those who might be a little bit unsure about whether or not they want to participate in the wider world of social media with a tool like Twitter, where it can potentially go out to the entire universe. Before I go any further, apart from that lady down the back there, who has a Twitter account? One, two, three. Okay, about half of you. Great. Who would call yourself, or would you call yourself an active user? Okay. So lots of people, like a lot of these tools, you may have registered, had a look, didn't really go back, or maybe you go back and have a look once a week. And Twitter's also a tool, as is Yammer. And just about everything I'm saying applies to both Twitter and Yammer. Are tools where you can lurk and learn a great deal just from sitting back and watching. So, just a bit of a wider context. We go way back into kind of the dawn of time, certainly to the dawn of humanity. David Attenborough, in that wonderful series of programs years ago called Life on Earth, tagged the series or the one on man or humanity, Man, the Compulsive Communicator. And that tag has stuck with me ever since, because it's true that if you just look around at human beings, we just love to talk. And you can give people a new tool and a certain percentage of us will grab it and use it to communicate. We just can't help ourselves. And it started way, way back, you know, with things like smoke signals. I mean, even then, we just needed to talk. So we used smoke signals to talk to people who were far away. So, you know, fast forward 2,000 years to the internet, it really is just an ongoing process of the same thing, that people, humanity, finding ways to talk to people, particularly talking to people who aren't here in the room with you. What's this? It's a letter. What's that? Mm-hmm. And this? Well, could be a voice thread, more typically. It's a forum. They're kind of going out of favour now. And this? Pardon? It could be Facebook. That's usually what people are saying. To me, I don't use Facebook very much, so to me it just, that's Twitter. But it's a format that is becoming quite a common format, where there are a series of quite short messages, one after the other, typically with an avatar at the start of the post. But the point about looking at these things is that the moment you look at that and you see the format, and it's actually a shape, isn't it? There's a shape to that communication, a physical shape that we recognise, and we make all sorts of assumptions about what we're going to do in this space, how we communicate, how we think, what we'd use it for, and we do the same in here. And the point is that every time we move into a new communication space, it has a quite profound impact on your brain. So all these unspoken, unconscious decisions are made about what you're going to do in here, how you think, and who you contact. certainly was the case with forums, and certainly is the case with Twitter. So Marshall McLuhan, the person who's most famous for that very famous quote, "It's the medium, not the message," says, "We shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us." So we created something like Twitter, we created something like email, and it changed the way we communicated. And Twitter is doing the same thing. And it's my opinion that Twitter has again changed the communication landscape forever, and there'll be no going back. Just as email did, and whether or not you agree, like, dislike what's going on with Twitter and Facebook and the like is really irrelevant, because it's here, it is rumbling along at frantic speed, and it won't go away. All we're going to do, or all we'll see, is a proliferation of Twitter-like tools. To make a comparison with the physical environment, in my personal life I've had a lot of contact with people who were close to architecture, so I've learnt to appreciate what buildings do. In the same way that going into an email space or into a Twitter space does to your brain, so walking into a building is the same thing. It affects the way you behave, feel. So it's just that point of the tools we use shape us. Now I'm going to be a bit flippant here and ask things like, you know, why would you use Twitter and say silly things like that? But I'll just acknowledge straight off that there's a bit of an element of this around the place. It's cool to use Twitter, and if you don't, well, you don't really have any value. But you might want to be like those, you know, really cool people who use Twitter, but maybe it's for this reason. And when Twitter started out, one of the things, and Twitter has been amazing for generating an incredible amount of negative feeling and really quite strong, angry, almost disgust, spitting, as someone said. When some people use the word Twitter, it's like they spit at the same time. It's like, how could you? And one of the reasons is because it's just there's 140 character message. You don't get to write in any more than 140 characters. That's the limit. This is a difference with Yammer. Yammer has no limit. But in Twitter, absolutely, 140 characters. So, but what's happened is that people have become very good at using 140 characters to say very complex things. Someone even compares, I mean, I think they're stretching it to a point, but compared reading a Twitter stream as reading poetry. It's like a line of a poem. And okay. That there are people who have become quite good, and I have heard just recently someone said there's a particular person they follow on Twitter because of the way they write. So people are turning this 140 characters, what started out as a limitation, into an advantage. And I should say at this point that Twitter started out life being known as a micro-blogging tool. It seems now to be more described as a micro-messaging tool, which I think is more accurate. You might use Twitter because you're that kind of person. And they're out there. I'm not one of these. I don't have any real need to tell people what I had for breakfast or that I'm going to bed right now or, I don't know, how I'm feeling at the moment. But a lot of people do. So, there's tons of this on Twitter. And it's another reason why it just generates these almost venomous feelings of absolute stupidity. What a moron you are. What a twit. But you see, with Twitter, you don't have to follow the people that use Twitter like this, because in Twitter, you choose who to follow, the same as you do in Facebook and a lot of social media tools. You choose who you want to read. So you don't follow the people who talk about Weet-Bix or painting their toenails. You just don't. You talk about people who talk about substantial things, and we'll come to that. I'm not saying that this is substantial, but they're certainly out there. You can stalk the famous. Kevin Rudd does have a Twitter account. The word is that he doesn't actually post them all. There are apparently two other staffers that are authorised to post as Kevin. He sometimes does. Malcolm Turnbull, word has it, is the only federal politician. Is he still a federal politician? That writes his own. So when you see something from Malcolm Turnbull on Twitter, it is actually him. John Cleese is certainly on Twitter. Stephen Fry, all sorts of people are on Twitter. So you can, if you want, find them, and you never really know whether it's them or not, but I think John Cleese is real, Stephen Fry is real, just a couple of people, and you know, so what? Why would you do that? Stephen Fry is very funny. There was one night he'd been out to dinner in LA, he'd had a few drinks, and he came home, logged onto the computer and just started yabbering on or whatever. It was just hysterical. So, you know, he was sharing his humour with the world, and you can do it. And you get this sense that they, you know, you kind of know them. Even though, you know, you're one of the 33,000 people who are following them, but they're following 10. Maybe you have a lot of spare time, because there are people who use Twitter a lot, and you do wonder, how do they do it? And we just need to acknowledge, yeah, it's a time factor. So if you at the end of this presentation, I guess I'm kind of hoping, but I'm not a kind of evangelist for Twitter, that if you at the end of this presentation thought, this is a good tool, I'd like to use it, that would be good. But you're going to have to make a decision. What are you going to not do now that you are going to, how are you going to allow Twitter? I mean, when you take on these new things, I think it's always a case of you've got to decide what you're going to dump rather than just keep adding to the load of your life. Now, Alison Miller's down the back, and she is a very regular, frequent Twitter user. Alison, you use it a lot. How do you manage it with time? So how does it work for you?
I'm obsessive compulsive, so I do have to restrict it, and so I use a lot of it to share information, like I am now, about your session with people outside of the other world. The other thing I use it a lot for is asking questions that I don't know the answers to, and people are quite quick at giving that information back.
So the time that it takes you to do that is, well, it's the return on your time is worth it.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah, so that, I mean, you really have to manage, work out your own way. What I typically do is that I would be, like, I'll have my allotted jobs for the day, so I'm sitting at my desk, you know, at the computer, and I'll use it like a break. So I'll take 5 minutes out of what I'm doing and just check Twitter, and let's do that now. Okay, can't do it that way. Is it in the other window? Let's hope. That's Yammer. There's Twitter. Now, notice that since I started this presentation, there are 18 new tweets, 18 new posts have come in since I started from the people I'm following. So I'll come in here. So I'd refresh that now just to get the updates and know that I'm looking at the most recent stuff. So, all right, I'd follow the ABC News. There's Alison. So what I'll do, so in my five-minute break, I'll actually scan what's happening here. And by then, I'll just look, here's Adelaide. That the whole bunch of things are coming in from the Adelaide News Service at the moment. Claire Brooks is posting something about which part of online is not real. So there's not a whole lot there. I typically, when I'll just do a quick scan like that, if there's a URL to go and follow, I'll go and follow it. But right now, there's nothing there that really appeals to me. I'm back at work. And that's what I'll do. And I'll do that 3, 4, 5 times a day, depending on the intensity and the volume of work. So for me, it doesn't take that much time. It's like, and I'll typically over morning coffee, you know, while you're maybe browsing your email instead of that, or as well as you just browse Twitter before you get into real work. But time is an issue. You're a twit. Wikipedia actually says people who use Twitter are possibly, well, they can be twits, they can be tweeters, or they can be twitterers. So, yeah, if you're called a twit for using Twitter, theoretically someone's right, even if they're just insulting you. Okay, you might like to be the kind of person who gets the latest breaking news as it happens. And in May last year, it was a moment where the world realised the power of a tool like Twitter. It beat the media in reporting those earthquakes in China. About 30 minutes before any news network knew that that earthquake had taken place, Twitter knew about it. And it was the same this year with the earthquakes and tsunamis in Samoa. In fact, it's the same for just about anything now. And why are all the ABC, like you saw the ABC in there and CNN, why are all the big broadcasters in here? Because this is where news breaks. Because people on the spot, wherever they are in the world, report what happens. And you'll get onto the TV and the radio about a half an hour later. But it starts here. So Twitter has become the tool where late-breaking news on the planet happens. And it's that kind of thing. There's no going back. Because you can't have a faster system for getting information to people around the planet than Twitter. So it's an almost real-time search tool. Now being used by some as an alternative search tool to Google. And using a hashtag, now this is the hashtag we used in Adelaide for our e-learning event, eDays09. So here we're using eLearning09. So let's go back into Twitter and do a search for eLearning09. So in here, I actually don't need to put the hashtag in when I'm searching, but when you're posting, you need to use this hashtag. So let's have a look what's been said about eLearning09. So here's the conversation taking place with people about this event that unless you are in Twitter, you don't know about. So people are talking about the event. They're talking about the person that they're listening to right now. In many cases, to people who aren't even here at the conference. There are people scattered around the world. As it happens, there's a big event today in Auckland, Askalite 09, which is the big higher ed conference, and there are a lot of people at Askalite who are talking to people here about what's going on here and vice versa. So people are communicating about the events they're at with each other while they're listening to a person live in the room. And this will take place all day. This stream of information, commentary about this event will take place all day long. And in many cases, the presenter out the front won't be aware that this is taking place, which raises a whole host of issues, which we'll come to. Let's try another search. What would you like to search? Just anything? Idea? Someone? Pardon? Climate change? Climate gate.
Climate Stephen. Gate.
One or two words.
All one word, G-A-T-E.
So Twitter's now looking for the climate gate conversation. Good choice, Stephen. 155 tweets since I started searching. So here are the ones that it's found and given me. And even in that little bit of time, 155 more comments have been made about this new word. Climate Gate. Now, Climate Gate was Russian Secret Service behind email hacking plot. Just getting this so I can scroll down here. Great construction of Climate Gate, and here's a URL, right? So if I was into Climate Gate, and let's do this, and I usually go to new window. So it's a blog about Climate Gate. So it's taking me off there now. Great deconstruction of Climate Gate. And let's say, I mean, this is my area of interest. You know, and here's graphs, quotes. So that's how easy it is. So, you know, you start out in Twitter, and you see a link like that, you jump to it, and I might decide I want to keep that. And what I'll do then is, if I haven't the time to read it now, I'll bookmark it. I'm usually social bookmark it using Delicious or Digo, right? So you collect stuff like this in a trice, and you just get. Now someone says, and it's true. I'd get half a dozen gems a day from Twitter just by scanning like that, pulling out a URL, looking at that. Yeah, that's great. I'll need that later. And there's nothing that comes near it. So, Stephen, I'm going to resist asking you to tell us about Climate Gate. We can all find that out later. But you can see how, well, I know we only tested the one, but I've tried lots of topics, and anything you put in here, you'll get the Twitter stream. You'll get that the up-to-the-minute commentary. I mean, it's the world talking. So what has the world said or posted about this topic in the last minute, the last 3 minutes, and you get it, and it just rolls on in. And it's just, like I say, it's changed the way people communicate. Not everybody, a sufficient part of humanity. 162 more tweets since you started searching. And they just roll on in. So real-time search tool. Absolutely. Yes. When you're... Okay, let's demo. Alt-tab. When I'm posting and to... I don't want to reply to Wireless World. I'm just going to go back home to my default position. So when I'm posting a message, presenting on Twitter, at... And now I'll use the hashtag... e-learning09. The fact that I use that hashtag means that aggregators, tools like Twitter and others that collect the data, will be able to find that because I've used the hashtag. When I'm searching, I don't need to do it. When I'm typing in my tweet, if I want it to be found and aggregated as part of the collection of stuff being said about this conference, I use the hashtag. So if I press update, so it's gone live, and if I was to do a search now of the tag eLearning09, mine would be there. Alison's saying yes.
Where was that question?
Down the front here.
Can you have a tweet with more than one hashtag in it?
And I said, Alison? And Alison said, yes, you can. You can have a whole tweet that consists of hashtags if you want.
See, they're just doing that to get me to run up and down the room. Nice.
Okay. Some other reasons that you might use a tool like Twitter. And the bits in brown are quotes from a survey I did with TAFE South Australia staff about a month ago now. So... they could equally apply to Twitter. Let's have a look at Yammer before we look at the next part of the presentation. That must be back in this window here. So here's Yammer, and you can see up the top it's labelled tafesa.edu.au, so straight away you can get the sense that it's a more private space, and only people with an email address with that domain can play in here. And we set it up about 10 months ago to see whether it would work, and 10 months later it's clearly working. And there are, hard to tell exactly how many people are using it regularly, but a lot more people are using it to look at, that is to kind of passively lurk and take information from them being active users. But it's the same process as Twitter. You post a message and people respond to it. Question over here.
Yes, is Yammer a open source software?
No, it's not open source, but it is free for basic use. So all I did was just put my email address in and said, can I do this? And there it is. And invited colleagues to join, and off we went.
And do you, belonging to a large organisation, do you have any problems with your firewall in relation
no.
to it?
No.
Thank you.
I mean, the thing about Twitter and Yammer and the like, and one of the reasons that they have become so popular, and I think they will be with us for a long time, is that the technological, or the level of technology and technical skill that people need to do them is almost nil. So they're dead simple. So Yammer looks very much like Twitter. Sure, any time. Questions, please.
For a number of very valid reasons, we are working on intranet rather than internet. And if we want to have the majority of staff enabling, and they've actually asked for this kind of tool, and I did a search and I haven't found anything yet that can be downloaded and set up on an intranet basis, quite a big one, like you know, a big intranet. Any ideas?
No, I'd say that the situation is still as you described, Dot, but Box Hill TAFE have just invented a tool called Bling, which is an in-house tool. So whether or not Box Hill are looking to share or profit from what they've created, but it's designed more for student use. So as the lecturer right now, I'd bring up Bling and you'd have laptops there and I'd ask you a question or a survey question or something and you pop in your answer and it appears on the screen. So Box Hill have created Bling. Purdue University in the US have created HotSeat for much the same purpose. So I think it's just a matter of time. These things will just proliferate and eventually there'll be one that is available. Alison, did you have your hand up there? No? You did.
Education.au have a social networking type size. I think it's called Fuse. The site's not called Fuse, but the software behind it is. It's the site they use is me.edu.au, which allows people to openly social network with each other, but you can actually use the open source software in your organisation behind firewalls. So you want to talk to Jerry Leeson at education.au. I don't know the technical part of it, but that's my understanding is, yeah.
And I should say that about Yammer, that we're using it as a free tool. If you want to use all the extra features in Yammer, then you pay, and it's not cheap. The only extra feature that it has that would be useful, as far as I'm concerned, is that we do have some people who work in TAFE South Australia who don't have an email address on this domain. They can't participate. And you can only have that option if you get the paid version. So this has been a really interesting example and kind of bottom up. So we just decided to run it. We've now got 395 people using it on a daily basis. And I got a message from the head of the department the other day asking, what's this Twitter thing and can you tell me a bit about it, please? So it's kind of interesting to see what's happening. That's right, this is New South Wales.
The Great Firewall, Twitter's blocked for the LOR Institute. I myself, not being a Twitter participant, I haven't really been out there screaming about it, but I'm starting to get trickles of teachers coming in and asking, why is Twitter blocked? Because that's what we want to communicate with our students for. Does anybody know of any communications with ITD to actually unblock it, because it's obviously in demand?
Is that down the back?
I was just going to say that Hootsuite isn't blocked, and you can tweet through that, because I'm in, I won't tell you where I'm from, but it goes through the firewall. So Hootsuite, I think it's actually spelt
H-O-O-T,
Hootsuite? Yeah, Hootsuite.
Okay.
It's exactly the same as Twitter, but it's some of you might use TweetDeck or something like that. Same thing. But they haven't blocked that one yet. Yeah.
I really can't see why people would block Twitter, because, I mean, its bandwidth is minimal. Its content is just useful, really. So let's not talk about that. You can see a couple of quotes there about why people hate... are using tools like this. And so that first one there, people are actually now in contact with people beyond their campus. I feel connected. It's like having colleagues all in the room at the same time, ready to answer questions and help out. This gets to the point of why people who don't use tools like Twitter, they just don't get it. Because if you're the kind of person who likes getting and sharing new ideas about your work, then there is no better tool. So this person has written that it's provided me with information happening at other campuses and read, you know, other colleges, other countries, other education systems that I wouldn't have heard about otherwise. New ideas, information, finding out what's out there, practical things to use. So you go on a tool like Twitter and you get all this stuff. And every time you go in there, just about every time you go in there, you get this stuff that's of value to yourself. And you can only do that for a certain time until you realise, I'm just taking. It's probably time that I start to give back. Because these things only work if people share. And I know this sounds very hippie-like and idealistic, but the internet still is this place, despite what the media might have us believe, It's this amazing place where people give away stuff and share stuff just because they do. And it's still this astounding frontier of giving away free stuff. Now, there's a whole lot of other elements to the internet, but I know someone who started on the internet 2 years ago and just could not believe it, the sharing that goes on. And it's still there. So Twitter is a thing to share, stuff that you know. It's like having a place to ask questions and help others where I can. So Alison said she uses Twitter to ask questions. So rather than ring up someone, do a Google search. If you've got an effective Twitter network, and that takes a while to build, you put out your question, and within minutes, you've got a half a dozen answers to your question. And it works. A wealth of current info and a wonderful way to get quick answers to a problem you might have. How do you do style sheets in Dreamweaver was one that came up in Yammer. All these questions, all these answers came back. Or looking for a tool to... I mean, that question, Dot, you know, yours about the intranet. Is there any software like this that I can use to do something similar on the intranet? You'll either get people saying, I don't know, or you'll get people telling you, well, yeah, try this. Maybe you like the idea of contributing to a body of knowledge that all members of my network or organisation have access to. Now, this is not as true of Twitter as it is of Yammer. It seems to be quite difficult to pinpoint exactly how long information stays in Twitter. Twitter is more a real-time thing. I mean, you're certainly building up a body of knowledge because we were able to search ClimateGate and see a whole lot of stuff relating to ClimateGate. But if we go back in next week and try and search for that same data, it's probably gone. Stephen, do you know how long Twitter keeps stuff? No. Yeah, down here in the front row?
I don't know, but I'm curious. I can't answer your question, Michael, but I'm curious about the storage capacity for your Yammer and also... the congestion on your bandwidth, because the organisation we're from, we have a great deal of challenge in relation to congestion across our intranet.
Well, so far, it really hasn't been an issue, but that may be because with Yammer, let's start with Twitter. With Twitter, it's text only. You cannot attach anything. You can't put an image with Twitter. You can post an image somewhere else and link to it from Twitter, but you basically, Twitter is just a series of text messages. Yammer, you can attach images and you can attach documents. But most people don't use it like that, and I guess we haven't encouraged it because it might start to be an issue. So I don't know is the simple answer to that question, but the way we've been using it so far, that hasn't been an issue. But what you do when you use Yammer is that every time you use it, you add to the knowledge database the collective information of you and your colleagues. So it's a great knowledge management tool. And again, it's what people don't quite get about these tools, that every time you contribute something, you're adding to the collective intelligence, and you're adding to this body of data that other people can access. Yeah, whether or not I had Weet-Bix for breakfast or paint my toenails pink isn't particularly useful for me, but for educators and people like me, and data on Twitter is quite clear, the predominant user are mid-career professionals. They're using it the way that I and Alison use it, as a way of getting information that's current to our field. It's not people just killing time talking about trivia because they're in Facebook.
Actually, you may have answered my question already, because when you use that phrase, the body of knowledge, mm-hmm. my immediate response was knowledge or trivia in terms of how you actually navigate your way through Twitter, so that you do just get things that are relevant and verifiable. I had another question when you talked about it being a source of online news. I mean, couldn't people post anything up there? Like, how do you verify or place value? And is part of that control when you actually and I don't Twitter yet, determine what your topic or area of interest might be? That's a long question.
Yeah, but good questions. I mean, you can see here that I'm following 293 people. A number of those 293 people I know personally. A good many of them, I know who they are professionally. I've never met them, but I know who they are, and I know their work, and I know how they think. There'd be a 10 in there that I've taken a punt. I've never met them. I've never heard of them through other people, but I like what they post, because I can go into anyone's Twitter stream and just see what they post about. Ah, interesting person. I'll add them to my list. Right, so I'm only following people that are pretty likely to just write good stuff. I mean, they're not idiots. They're not out to play pranks, kind of tell lies. And I'm being followed by 449, is it? 442. And that's the difference between that 293 and 4, it's about 150. Most of those 150 would be businesses. People who have a commercial interest in using Twitter because they need the data and they're tracking any use or mention of the word Sony or Weet-Bix or what other brand or logo may be mentioned. Come to your other bit about, you know, how do you verify information. But Alison, do you want to run down the back again, Bernadette?
See, am I a metaphor here for old ways of doing things?
Probably. See, if we're all on Twitter, we could just have the conversation without having to go through the mediator. Alison, I wanted you to just tell you that story about how you bought a product and how you mentioned it on Twitter, and within a very short time, the company who sold the product got in touch with you.
I was just going to say, can I just answer that one about verifying information on it? I'm like you, I'm very sceptical about what's put up there, but what will happen is, if it's not right, people will very quickly tell other people it's not right. So I've sort of tweeted things from conferences and then people have very quickly come on and told me that's rubbish or that's crap or this is not right and have a look over there. So it's the community that will bring out what's the good and the bad in it. But I was actually, there was a couple of things. One is I wanted to know whether you could book online for Tiger. I like to pick my seat when I fly. And I just put it in there and said, can you book online for Tiger? And then Tiger Airlines came on within about 5 minutes and said, no, can't do this at the moment, but you can do it when you get to the counter. So there's a number of, I can't remember the product, but I think I bagged a product and then they came on and offered some services that I could use if I wasn't happy with their product.
Thanks, Alison. So the downside to all these people following you is that it makes you look like you're really popular when in fact they're just using you as commercial data. But if you buy a dodgy product, I get into Twitter as quick as you can and bleat about it, and there might be a chance that they'll get in touch and fix you up really quickly, because the last thing they need is you going on about their bad, dodgy product to a global audience. So things work both ways. And I will blame Oprah Winfrey single-handedly for being the person who presented Twitter to the mainstream. Twitter was quietly ticking away in the background as a kind of geeks thing until Oprah had it on her show, and the following day she had 300,000 followers. And that's when the media leapt in there and it became mainstream. So some people, you get a note when you get a message saying, you know, person X is following you, I can block them. And some people do that. I'm kind of curious to leave it there and just to see whether there's any consequences of that, and so far not. I don't tend to be, I don't care what people know about me, basically. I might regret that one day, but 12 years on the internet so far, and so far so good. So you only get the information from the people you follow, right? And as Alison said, they tend to self-correct. How do I know who's
out there and who you want to follow?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, how did I do it? Let's take Alison and I as an example. We're colleagues. We both are interested in this stuff, so we probably very quickly followed each other. And then I might have gone into Alison's
Twitter feed and said, oh, Alison's following George Siemens and Stephen Downs, and oh, right, I'll follow them too. I just click follow, right? And then you go into George Siemens, who's an e-learning person, who's a person who kind of talks about connectivism, and you see who George is following. Ah, select a few from George. So all of a sudden, you've got a really quite esoteric elite network of leading thinkers in the field of, in my case, e-learning. And they're really, and apart from people who are at the practitioner level, who are putting it, you know, doing it, that's really all I follow. I don't follow Twitter for anything else, apart from a little bit of news and a little bit of football. For me, it's a professional tool.
Could you take on a false identity? I mean, could you pose off as somebody that you're really not?
Yes.
And you could therefore fool others into thinking the same?
Yeah, but you'd have to be quite elaborate about it. I mean, you'd have to... Now, let's go back to my... Let's go to... Well, let's just take Alison as an example. So there's Alison, the other 66. So it will take me to her page. See here in the corner, she's got a web address, by staying connected in a connected world, creating change through learning, true lust for learning. I'm going to try another one. So Alison could have created that. It could be completely bogus. Ah, is this you, Bernadette?
Yep.
Do you mind if we go into yours?
No.
So it goes into, and I can see here that Bernadette's got a web address. She's biomanagement training. So I'll go in here, and she's actually got a phone number in here. Is this a Skype phone number or iPhone? Okay. So... if there's not a lot of information in there that I can verify, I'm just not interested. So I'll go into that person's Twitter page and I'll check that URL. I'll check what they say about who they are and I'll do a little bit of digging. And if it doesn't make sense or it can't be verified, don't believe you. Don't trust it. Not interested. So yes, you could create a false ID, but you would have to go to some trouble to get someone like me. You'd need to create a URL that looked professional, a website that was professional, other contact details or a job role. And down here, you can see here are the people you're following, right, that Bernadette is following. So I'd check that too. And if I don't know any of these people and I can't verify the information, well, you could be a complete, you could be a non-existent person or someone I shouldn't trust. So you'd have to go to a lot of trouble to create a false ID that would fool someone like me. Okay, I may not be typical. But this all does actually come under the heading of digital literacy and how to behave be sensible and careful on the internet, because these are the sorts of things that we need to know. How do you verify that someone is who they say they are?
Is there a bonus on you putting your actual name? But Bernadette has got her real name up there, obviously, but she could put something totally different, but everything else would be authentic.
Yeah, which a lot of people are doing now for very good reason. And look, I don't think... a lot of you will know Alex Hayes. Alex has recently created a new ID that he uses on the internet. I mean, it's not very hard to find out that it's actually Alex, but Alex has decided that there's a lot of things that he said in the past publicly that he isn't particularly proud of, and he's kind of starting again, right? So, there's a lot of discussion, of course, about, particularly with younger people, and a lot of younger people in Facebook, for example, as a matter of course, they have two IDs. They have one for their friends, and they have one for the rest of the world. So the rest of the world communicates with this person, with a particular ID, but her friends communicate with that same person through the real ID. And so they can set Facebook up so that only their friends can see it, or Facebook is incredibly versatile. I can set it up so you can see it, you can see it, you can see it, you and you, and the rest of you can't. Right? Or I can select a view in Facebook that you three or five see, and you five see different stuff. See, it's a complicated question, but I'm beginning to... My own personal opinion is I don't think it's bad that young people actually create two IDs, one that's professional and strictly professional that might be of use through their life, and another one where if you, have been sprung drunk at a party and there's a silly photograph or you're doing really stupid things on a video on YouTube, it doesn't come up under your professional ID. Yeah, that's where it's totally out of your control. I went to I didn't go, I was told about it, an Adelaide
person with a reasonably high profile at the start of the evening, asked everybody present, got everybody present, and said, look, if you're taking photographs, recording anything at all that you're documenting this evening, fine, but don't please put any of it on the internet, please. As my personal request to you is don't. And as far as I know, people didn't, but that's the kind of thing you need to do now. Could be. Look, before we hear from you, all valid concerns, but it does actually take it away. We're moving into the whole area of privacy, what's public, what's private, how do you behave responsibly on the internet, should you be afraid of the internet? These are huge questions, and these are conversations we need to have with all our students of all ages. We need to have the conversation with ourselves, pass it on to our students, pass it on to our children. It's a huge area, and we've just begun. Question or comment?
Michael, I have not Twittered at all, in fact, quite new to it. How difficult is it to set up? Like I have a number of colleagues or tutors that I look after, for example. How difficult is it to set up a Twitter account? Is it? I mean, very basic question.
Really, really easy. I guess the best way for me would be to sign out and see what it looks like when you come to twitter.com, and there it is, sign up now. And look, it's so long since I did it. Has anyone done it in the recent past? I mean, I think it's minutes.
You could set up your new Britney Spears identity. They tend to be the ones that it's all the celebs that have these false identities, you know. It's, they seem to be the biggies.
At least fake Stephen Conroy is honest. He got sacked. Okay, there's the form you're going to get. Username, password, email. Create my account. I think it's that simple. Yeah. Then you're up and running. Then you need to follow people. Mm-hmm. I do want to move back to the presentation to cover off anything we haven't, well, I like that last three lines there. Have visited far more educational sites based on info from Yammer than any other method in all my years with TAFE. This question earlier, or the issue raised of people who are not, well, I'm out the front, you're there, you could be on Twitter talking about me, talking about my presentation to people who are anywhere in the world and I don't know about it. In a very real sense, if you're talking to a Twitter connected audience, there is no audience anymore because they have access. In fact, they probably have more access to resources and further information than you do. So if you're thinking about this as a teaching tool, the expert out the front, even though kind of physically it looks the same, I'm at the front doing most of the talking, you could be there and, you know, there's a lot going on, much more than there used to be. So in the sense of an audience and the presenter being different, the teacher and the class being different, it's gone. Gone. All the barriers are gone. In fact, the class, the audience may have, in a sense, greater power than the person out the front. You do need to take care because you do have the opportunity to destroy my reputation to a global audience, and I don't know about it. Interesting to see how people behave in this situation, and I've been in a couple of them so far, and generally people, there's a sense of, we should stop this. This is not fair, and in fact, if you're doing a presentation and you have had people twittering about your presentation, the worst thing that you could hope for is that people stop twittering because you've lost them. So it's quite the reverse of people not being engaged. If people are twittering about your session, they are totally engaged with me, with each other, other people around the world. And if it stops, I know I've become boring. Won't go on about that. We've been to the Twitter. Well, we won't have time for that. Just a couple of words on teaching. I'm not yet convinced. This is a site, if you go to the slides, I don't know whether the slides, or they're on SlideShare. It's a site by a guy called Steve Wheeler, who actually this morning decided he wanted to follow me. He must have heard that I was talking about him. He's got this article there that's got lots of ideas about how to use teaching or Twitter with teaching. I don't reckon they're that great, his ideas, frankly, but I did tick number 2 there.
So it's back to that 140 characters thing. Get students to read something and post a summary or précis of key points in 140 characters. I think that would be a really good exercise for people. Use the back channel to provide feedback on classes in real time. I mean, as I mentioned, Box Hill TAFE, Purdue University in the US are starting to use the tool like this. So I'd stop every 10 minutes and say, look, please now type into Twitter, hot seat, blink. How's it going? Anything you want to ask? Feelings about the session so far, boom, they're up there for everybody to read. I might modify what I do, answer questions. So I've got this constant stream of feedback to make sure that I'm meeting your needs. 2 minutes? One? Then let's look at this. Yep. It does kind of strip things down to the basic. It becomes off the cuff and spontaneous, not much time for reflection, but this is just one space. It's not saying, I'm certainly not saying, and I don't want everybody to communicate in places like Twitter, but they have their place for that quick sharing of information, that quick asking for answers to a question. But not everybody likes it, and I reckon we better stop there. Thank you. Thanks, Alison, for your help. And Bernadette for running up and down.
I can do with the exercise. Look, we might have time for one last question, and we're deliberately finishing sessions a few minutes early so you have time to get to your next session. So one question, perhaps from someone who hasn't asked a question. Anyone who hasn't asked one who'd like to? There you go.
Oh, I was just wondering, with the China example and the way that the media are using this as an information source, how do you know that, or how do you get the message out about something like there's an earthquake happening here now? How did the media know that message was there?
I would just presume that a number of people living in the area just said, we've just had a hell of an earthquake. Anyone feel anything? And then it just... Right, another, yeah, I felt it too. And then that's in China, and then it goes outside China, and all of a sudden people in New Zealand, hey, there's been a huge earthquake in China. Lots of buildings have been destroyed. That's, I mean, I don't...
The message has to go through networks and hubs or whatever to get to...
The only people who are going to see a message that I post are the 450 that follow me. But if any of those 450 decide to retweet, then it goes to all their network, and so on and so forth. No. Yep. Okay.
Earthquake starts to happen, somebody will say, oh, did you see this being tweeted in such and such a space? So they can't filter the whole Twitterverse, but they themselves will have networks, and probably what they'll do is start to follow other people who are likely to retweet these sorts of things.
One more over there.
One more.
Okay. Why doesn't Twitter like apostrophes?
I don't know. I've never had a problem. I think it's probably the Twitter users just reckon they're not necessary, isn't that? It's not Twitter.
IE6. Well, that explains it. Well... Michael, did you want to just say something to finish off?
Thank you.
More insightful words. Look, please join with me in thanking Michael Coghlan for his presentation today. Thank you so much.